Hey, hey, have you heard? It's your host, Chris DeMakes, and I'm headed back to the Punk Rock Museum. That's right, the powers that be have invited me back, and I couldn't be more excited. Allow me to be your guide as we wind through 5 decades of punk rock history, merchandise, and memorabilia. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Friday, May 3rd, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th. There'll be 2 tours each day at 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. And the best part for me is you. Your stories, your questions, your experiences. Yep, some of you old punkers have taught this guy a thing or two on these tours, and I love it. Head over to thepunkrockmuseum.com for tickets. Don't miss out. Only 30 spots per tour. Get your tickets now at thepunkrockmuseum.com.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh, how so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Hey everybody, today's guest is vocalist, guitarist, multi-instrumentalist, and producer, Dez Rocks from New York City. Together we break down the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the track, MMC, taken from his 2021 album, A Real Good Person in a Real Bad Place. This song really took me on a ride the first time I heard it. My initial thought was, how did someone come up with this and put it all together in a cohesive manner? It was so cool to pick Dez's brain about just that. Dez mentioned that his influences aren't just musical. They take form from such things as theater, plays, musicals, and his biggest inspiration of all, his home, New York City, where chaos tends to run amok 24/7, 365. Dez produces all his own music, preferring to leave in those imperfections that work, those happy accidents that make the music feel real and have a pulse, a true energy. For being someone who creates most of his sounds through computers, beneath it all, Dez is the real deal. Pull up some of his live videos online and you'll see him ripping guitar solos to a rabid audience. Oh, and he might just do the best Mickey Mouse impersonation I've ever heard. For all this and a couple New York City car horns blasting in the background, don't touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard?
What's up, Dez?
Hey, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic. You know, I was approached by your publicist or manager, I'm not sure. I thought it was publicist, about you being on the show. And I hadn't heard of you. And, you know, you can listen. If you ever had the time in your whole life to go back and listen to all 80 episodes I've had so far, I've never said this to an artist, but you're my new favorite artist. Dude, you are awesome.
Thank you so much. That means the world to me, man. Thank you so much.
You have a sound. And I was like, you know, just because I haven't heard of an artist doesn't mean that, you know, I had no idea how known you were, how big you were. It turns out you're a relatively new artist. But your sound, man, it's incredible. I love this track that we're going to talk about. For the listeners right now, a little bit of an introduction for you. And then typically, I don't like to conduct these podcasts as interviews, but I have some questions I want to ask you before we dive into the track that we're going to talk about today, because I'm fascinated with where you come from musically, because I just in this track alone, man, I'm like, how can someone this young have this kaleidoscope of influences? This song is crazy to me, and crazy in a great way. Dez is from New York City. Before starting Dez Rocks, he performed in the band Secret Weapons, which were signed to Epic Records. Dez Rocks has released 3 EPs, Let the Vultures In 2018, which was self-released, Martyr Parade in 2019, which was released on Lowly. Was Lowly a record label?
Distributor, yeah.
Distributor, okay. And This Is Our Life in 2020, which was released on 300 Entertainment. His full-length album, A Real Good Person in a Real Bad Place, awesome title, was released on September 24th, 2021 on 300 Entertainment. The album was self-recorded and produced, which is gnarly because this track sounds so friggin' amazing. And then I went ahead, as I do with these episodes, and I go through and I want to look at some live clips. And I found one from a couple weeks ago, November 4th, 2021, you at the Bowery Ballroom in New York playing the track we're going to talk about today, MMC, which stands for Mickey Mouse Club. And you're like Prince up there, man. You're like playing this killer, like, just guitar solo. And it's like, there's elements of rock, electronica. There's so much going on here. So I just want to start off by asking you, like, who's your top five influences? Like, if you were to say, this is what gets me moving, this is what's motivated me and wanted to make me a musician, because I'm hearing dozens of influences within this track.
Wow. Well, that's an interesting question, because I always kind of separate it into two parts, because so many of my influences are not musical. So for me, like, my number one influence is New York City. Like, New York City is everything at once. It is constant. It is electric. And it all comes together to make one singular thing. And that's really like a microcosm for everything I'm about as an artist. But on the musical side, I grew up worshiping Queen and Elvis Presley and Prince and Roy Orbison and so many other artists.
So I got the Prince thing right with the guitar. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. You know what I mean? I'm always working on my spins and stuff, you know?
That's what it reminded me of, that.
Yeah. But you should see it in the clubs when there's like carpet on the stage and you can't spin more than a quarter of an inch, you know? A lot of tripping and falling. I mean, you know that life, you know? So yeah, like, I'm always just going for the most grandiose music I can possibly make, no matter what's happening in the world at that time.
I love that we just heard the New York City horn behind you. That adds authenticity to what you're talking about.
Oh, what's funny is I came here because this is a quiet place. So it's funny. You're going to get some taxis and horns for sure.
That's perfect. That adds to the realness of what we're talking about. You mentioned Queen. I'm going to get to that in a moment. You used the word grandiose, which I have that in my notes. That's how I describe your sound. It's just theatric. It's grandiose. This record was self-recorded and produced. Was that a conscious decision? Was this all stuff in your head that you heard that you didn't want a producer to screw it up? Because this is wild, this track. I say you're my favorite new artist because I haven't heard a song like this in a while where I went, wow, someone's kind of created a new sound.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you know, the self-production thing, it just kind of came out of necessity. You know, I didn't have a lot of money and I didn't have a lot of resources. So I just kind of had to have a very DIY approach to everything I did as an artist. I did do a couple weeks with a big producer because I was like finally able to do this on my own. And I did like 3 weeks and it was a very great experience. But I got home and I was like, it's not me. It's not me.
Uh-huh.
So I just took everything and I dragged it to the recycle bin. And I just made the whole album on this 2014 MacBook Pro that I'm talking to you on now.
It's incredible because the record sounds, this term is cheesy, but it sounds current. It sounds like is good or anything production-wise that's out there, which with technology now, it's amazing that you can do this from a laptop. But you have this in your head and you were able to spill it out by yourself with no outside influences, and that's incredible.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was a journey and I almost lost my mind. But yeah, you know, it was a pretty maddening process. There were definitely some shining moments in there, you know, just sitting alone in my little spot and making the whole record. But I'm so proud of it because I will live and die for every single note and every single element of production because they're all from me.
It's funny you say that because I don't think there's a note or a thing, a moment wasted in this song.
Thanks.
And it's just, no, it's everything. Sometimes when things are deliberate or intentional, it sounds forced, like, oh, that's contrived. I don't mean it like that. It's like everything that is in this song, it's perfect. But at the same time, I'm sitting here trying to, as a musician, you know, I know how to pick up a guitar. I know how to take a song. I could play this song how I would play it. But in my head, it's like, where did he come up with these drum loops and these synth sounds? And like, what is going on here? And then you get into the next part, which we're going to dive into the song. It's just the first time I heard it, you know, because like I said, we'll get submissions for the show and I'll take listen to stuff. And once in a while, you know, something will catch our ear, a newer artist. And this was immediate. It was like, what is this? You know, in a great way.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, I think I'm so guided by a sense of lack of musicianship. I really don't know what I'm doing, and I'm simply just expressing myself through whatever tool I have. So that guides the production too. You know, I have very much, there are no rules. So for me to like walk into a room and it's like a bunch of guitars and they're like, oh, we're going to do guitars today. Let's try a couple of different guitars. Like that to me is my nightmare.
Okay, but that's intriguing. With that said, you're up there just ripping that guitar solo. Like you own the place. Like that's your first instrument, but you're not approaching this from a guitar-based aspect. You're approaching this from everything in your computer and how you're building stuff through sound.
Yeah, everything is fair game. Like a lot of the drums, I'm just programming on my own on a QWERTY keyboard. You know what I mean? So I'm just like grooving on that the same way I'll groove on my guitar, the same way I'm just kind of chasing an energy and a vibe. And musicianship, it's not really for me. I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm just expressing myself.
Well, you wouldn't know it by this production, and it's incredible. I would love to be in a room with you one day from scratch of you recording a song and seeing how you Frankenstein all this together, because to me it is just a completely different world. On one hand, I get it as a musician, as a producer, I understand it, but like, where did the inspiration come from? Where did this like this beast come from? Because this song, it's another animal.
Yeah, you know, for me, the process is very manic. It is not focused. It is not a traditional thing where you sit there with a whiteboard and it says guitars, synths, and drums, and you check boxes as you go along. To me, checking boxes is antithetical to creativity. And I have many songs that have no guitar in them. You know, it's really just like constant experimentation, because my whole goal and mission statement as an artist is to drag rock and roll kicking and screaming into the 21st century and be a modern version of a Freddie Mercury, you know, music that is big and unites the world, but for its time is progressive. You know what I mean? So I always get caught in this like classic rock trap, right? Where someone says, classic rock is the standard, the classic. But people fail to appreciate that classic rock was progressive at the time. Led Zeppelin, progressive, experimental. Queen, progressive, experimental.
Sure.
And that spirit to me is so lost today.
That's a great take. And again, not to bring up age for another reason, just that insight as a younger artist, that's refreshing to hear, because you're right. Led Zeppelin didn't sound dated in 1971. Queen didn't sound dated in 1974. It was the moment of the times that something becomes classic because time has elapsed.
Yes.
You know, nothing more, nothing less. That's an interesting take. And as I said before, and I mean this track is different. I haven't really heard something, and I'm probably going to tell you that I hear influences of bands maybe you've never even heard of in this. Yeah. And maybe you have, maybe you'll surprise me, but there's some stuff here I'm like going, wait a second, where did he get this from? It's just, it's really cool. I also like what you said about checking boxes, because that's kind of how I work. You know, I'm like, okay, I got to do the rhythm guitars now, and I got to do the lead guitars. And you're approaching this kind of like, you're just building the track and going, and all of a sudden your brain goes, you know what? What if I do another padded synth on the left speaker over here? Cool, I'm going to do that now. And you're kind of just throwing everything in the pot, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. It's everything at once. And yeah, like the word you said before, the D word, different, that's the most important word in the world to me, without a doubt. I would love for you to say, I hate your music so much, it is offensive to me, but it is very different. And I would say, thank you. But if you said, I love your music, it sounds like everything else, I would say, fuck you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, for me, it's always about taking that big swing and getting as weird as I can, because you can always bring it back. And you're never as weird as you think you really are, you know, and just going for it. And with the big swing, either you fall on your ass and whiff, or you knock it out of the park, because anything in the middle, it's too crowded. There's no room for that today. You know, it's a waste of my time.
Well, I loved this track when I heard it, but I really loved the project when I went on YouTube. I've never seen you live in person. I hope to someday. But when I saw it live, I was a believer. I'm always a believer in live music. You can create stuff in the studio, but I want to feel the energy. Mm-hmm. I want to feel where this guy's coming from. And I saw the show. I saw the crowd going nuts. You got some fans, man, and they're believers, because they're hearing what I'm hearing. And I'm looking at the comments. I went through the YouTube comments, and it's just more than not, people are saying, you know, can this guy release a bad song? You know,
thanks.
It's great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The live show is everything. And I'm sure you're in a similar position where like you're making a song, you think about how it's going to be live, and that guides me almost absolutely.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, I want to jump into the track now, and I noticed that you abbreviated the song MMC. Was that for any any trademark infringements or anything or not?
Just legal reasons, you know what I mean?
Okay, okay. That's more than I went. Legal, not trademark.
Would have been Mickey Mouse Club if I had my way, you know?
Yeah, okay. So we're gonna call it MMC. That's the name of the song. It's 3 minutes and 49 seconds. And when the song starts up until the 10-second mark, there's this, I'm calling it a sinister guitar riff with just this nasty sounding feedback that's off to the left speaker. The guitar riff's off to the right. This riff, and here's where I'm going to, you know, talk about some old punk bands that I was into. Were you ever into like Black Flag or Agent Orange or The Damned?
You know, it's interesting you say that because I can see the influence that you're citing now, even though I wasn't cognizant of that while making it. So that's a really interesting observation. Yeah.
It's just, I'm like, what is this? This is like a, you know, but at the same time, it's not how Black Flag would approach it with this fuzzy, fuzzy, dirty guitar. Yeah, it's a nasty sounding guitar tone, but it's more of a modern, I dare say the word pop tone to it. But the heartbeat of it reminds me of something old punk. And this riff's going for 10 seconds. And then immediately after the 10 seconds, you're into verse number one.
Welcome to the Mickey Mouse Club. Exactly what to do with a pretty face before it ends up on a milk jug. And all that's left is just a hollow memory of your life. Let us feast on your insides, and then we'll laugh about it.
That guitar riff's still going. That's continuing. And there is these 80s sounding, I say 80s, like 1980s sounding program drums that are kind of happening. And the vocal delivery here, here's the next influence. Were you ever into Oingo Boingo?
I don't even know what that is. What is Oingo Boingo?
Oingo Boingo. Their lead singer's name is Danny Elfman. Danny Elfman.
Oh, Danny Elfman. Okay. I know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, Danny Elfman did, you know, he wrote The Simpsons and a lot of the, he's done tons of television shows, you know, composer. But Danny was the singer in Oingo Boingo.
Oh, and I have a lot of homework now. I like this. Yeah.
The delivery on this, I'm like, man, all of a sudden we went from this punky, noisy feedback thing to now we're in this 80s program drums that sounds like Oingo Boingo. And I'm a sucker for anything 80s. That's when I grew up. So I just loved this sound. And I want to go through these lyrics here. I'm going to go all the way up into the first chorus. I'm considering that there's a pre-chorus in here, and we'll get to that. So I'm going to read the verse one and the pre-chorus one, and I'm going to have you set up these lyrics. Welcome to the Mickey Mouse Club. You know exactly what to do with a pretty face before it ends up on a milk jug, and all that's left is just a hollow memory of your life. Let us feast on your insides, and then we'll laugh about it. What's going on in your sick, sinister mind there, Dez?
I'm always very much a believer in this Nina Simone philosophy, which is that the art must reflect the times. And as an observer in modern rock music, I've just been seeing so much like inauthentic bullshit. You know, and I've talked to like a lot of people on the teams of these like totally manufactured fake ass like punk artists who never fucking lugged a cab up a basement staircase a day in their life. You know what I mean? And I was like, these kids are just selling their souls to the devil. So I wanted to create this kind of like very Danny Elfman like roller coaster ride of what the journey is like for these people from start to finish, and how antithetical that whole process is to art.
Okay, okay. So you did reference Danny Elfman just now. So you're kind of, okay, so he is an influence.
Well, like now that you said that, it's like almost like this Nightmare Before Christmas, like kind of just journey and like the whole fantastical element of music that is so absent, you know?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, when you get up to the point where it says memory, that's when I'm considering it. It changes to the pre-chorus because this part happens again after verse two. And right here on memory, on the Y, on the last line of memory, the last syllable, and your life, there's these hits. It almost sounds like a backward synth or a guitar or voices panned off to your right.
Just a hollow memory of you.
What is that?
Oh man, I think I was just like literally like clacking the table that I was working on and just filtering it through a bunch of weird like Eventide plugins and just kind of.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's like stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay, and on life, on the word life, which is of your life's the first word I'm getting, or the first line I'm considering of the pre-chorus. There's like, it sounds like a drum flutter. Is that you on the desk?
Yeah, that's the desk. And I'm very into just like sampling non-musical things and assigning them notes and tones and making them instruments.
Oh man, it's so badass. It sounds like you sped up a drum machine there, like an old 80s Casio, you know.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I could see that. A lot of the sound effects are just kind of nonsense, you know? I wish I knew how to recreate them. I just get it and I'm like, oh, that's dope. I just keep moving. I don't think about anything.
I wish I had time to do that. I know in my world how to record something. I'm not going to sit here and take 20 minutes to tap on my desk and filter it through a bunch of plugins. That's incredible. Like, maybe I need to do that.
Well, I think the naivete is where the originality is. Like, I hate when I know what I'm doing. I'm sure you have go-to chords and go-to progressions. And
oh, yeah.
Pick of those. You know what I mean?
Yes.
To be a virgin on something is so exciting.
Man, well, that is really cool that you filtered that through. And for the listeners, plugins are just basically within his MacBook, and they're just different sounds that you can put on. You know, you can put a chorus effect or a flanger on something or a delay that he was running. Him tapping on the desk through it makes it sound like the drums. That's really cool. The last line here, and then we'll laugh about it. It's almost whispered, and the band stops, and there's this pitch shifted low, ha 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 ha. Out of nowhere, right there, you're writing the track, and in your brain you go, yeah, I need to pitch shift a low, ha ha ha, in here. Like, where did that come from, that inspiration?
So those two moments in the pre-choruses, the first one and the second one, those were actually at the very, very end. It was originally just a space, and I was like, oh, I gotta fill it with some nasty drum fill or something. I was like, no, that's so obvious. That's low-hanging fruit. Like, use a character to kind of drive home the message. So to me, it's just kind of like these kind of anonymous doers who are like consuming this person's soul in exchange for stardom.
It sounds sinister. It's just that ha ha ha. And it sounds, this track is so happy at times, but it sounds evil. It's coming at you in all directions. When I got done listening to this for the very first time, I truly didn't know how it made me feel. I was like schizophrenic after I listened to it. It was cool.
Because
I haven't listened to a song in a long time that made me feel like, wait a second, I think I just lost my mind without using drugs, alcohol, or anything. Like, what just happened? You know?
That's killer. That's the intended effect. So that makes me really happy that was your reaction. That you can't just put it in a box. You don't go, oh, pop punk. Oh, alt rock. Nope. Like,
no. And I had to keep going back and listening to the track over and over. It wasn't a one-time thing. I liked it after the first listen, but I had to listen to this song a bunch to get it. And even now, I don't know if I necessarily get it, which is still a good thing, because it's really a cohesive piece of music that to me is just all over the place. And so a lot of times when something's all over the place, it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, look, I think you like, there's a lot of tracks on my hard drive that are all over the place that are just disasters, never made it out. But I think you have to experiment ceaselessly before you get that one. You know, like Bohemian Rhapsody doesn't come in a vacuum. It comes because of dozens of failed Queen attempts that just really weren't quite there before they got it. You know, so like, yeah, I think just pushing and going for it made it all tie together.
Hey, everybody, don't you dare go anywhere. There's lots more Chris DeMakes a Podcast after these messages from our sponsors.
Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, but we didn't stop there. We combined soft and bouncy to bring you new Sweet Tarts Gummies Fruity Splits, a uniquely delicious dual-sided gummy with one side that's sweet and one side that's tart, but entirely smooth and squishy. Mmm, a powerfully perfect combo. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine.
Each week on the One Hit Thunder podcast, we welcome a special guest to come take a deep dive into a one-hit wonder artist with us. And together, we decide if that artist brought the one-hit thunder or was nothing more than a one-hit blunder. You can find One Hit Thunder anywhere that you listen to podcasts, so hit that subscribe button and join in on the fun each week. And now, back to the show.
The track is 3 minutes and 49 seconds, and at 35 seconds, we're already at the first chorus. And that's quick. Manufactured, overrated, when you cut my veggies. And that's great because you're already at the hook within 35 seconds. And there's a lot that's already hit the listener at this point. When we get into chorus one, again, I'm going to read the lyrics here. I want you to set it up. And then I'm going to comb through it with some notes here that I have. Pretty much everything here is harmonized. This is where you're first hearing the first harmonies in the song. And I love it because this chorus truly lifts here. And the lyric is manufactured, overrated. When you come... And that's not spelled C-O-M-E for the listeners. When you come, I bet you fake it. Hope you choke on every word that leaves your throat. Plastic and manipulated. You everything you hated. You're just a punchline to an inside joke. What's going on there? What's happening?
Oh, man. I feel like these are some of my most literal lyrics that I've ever written because it's just taking a shot. You know what I mean? It's taking a shot at all the manufactured bullshit and how people will start with a shred of artistic integrity and lose it so quickly in exchange for something that doesn't end up even taking them where they want to go. You know, you always got to just do you and be yourself. And that message of authenticity defines everything I do.
Well, man, I heard an underlying punk rock attitude through this track. That lyric is interesting in that chorus and everything that you just said, because to it, just an average listener that were to hear this song, the production's modern. It does have elements of some newer stuff that's out there, but it could be dismissed as this is overrated. This is just like everything else to the normal listener. I didn't hear that though. I'm like, there's something here. You know, even though you say these are pretty literal lyrics, I like what you're saying here.
Thank you, man. Like, you know, it's like, I just wanted it to come in like a ton of bricks and not pull any punches. And with many other songs, I do like to dress up some of the sentiments and much more poetry because that's something that's very important to me. But this one, I just wanted to come out guns blazing, you know?
Right. Well, I had jotted down here that this chorus sounds like it could be a pop punk song from 10, 15 years ago. Yeah. If there was like real acoustic drums and big guitars here, I'm hearing like My Chemical Romance, Panic at the Disco. I'm hearing some of those influences in here, but yet the production doesn't sound anything like those bands. You know, if I were to take this chorus, I could go, okay, let me throw it in my studio. I'll put big guitars on it. I'll, you know, it would sound like a pop punk song. So that spirit's there, but it's not. It's cut from a different cloth production-wise.
One thing that will never be lost is melody, and just gigantic melody is something I'm always chasing. And I feel like that's what pop punk established so incredibly well. So like incorporating that into a song that's kind of taking a shot at artists who are pretending to be in that genre a little bit, I was like, I'll show you how to write a fucking pop punk chorus. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I spent my life in fucking basements and getting my ass kicked and sleeping on stage floors. Like, you're all pretending that you're like pop punk artists now. Like, I'll fucking show you pop punk. You know, that's like my whole approach to it.
I like it because it's not, you obviously those bands were influences, but you don't want to sound like them. It's already been done.
Oh,
but yeah. I can hear the influence, but it doesn't sound like their productions. It's your own animal. It's your own thing. I love that this is where we first get introduced to harmonies in the song. I think the harmonies are great here. On the last line, you're just a punchline to an inside joke. There's this big snare roll that goes back into the reintro. The drums now are double time here. You're getting that crazy guitar, what I'm calling the Black Flag riff, back with that just nasty feedback, but the drums are hammering you double time. It's the same length, two measures as the top of the song. Did you ever do a demo to this track?
Oh, no. There are no demos of my songs, really, because everything starts as a demo that I just kind of then just enhance a little bit, and that's the record.
I kind of thought you were going to say that because of the way that you build tracks.
Yeah, I don't really write linearly. Literally, I don't know what the word would be. I don't write in a linear fashion. I just kind of sit down at Logic and I just start getting weird and then something's born. And a lot of the vocals on my album are just one take, stream of conscious with nothing written. And there's a certain frenetic magic to it that I couldn't recreate, and it just is as is.
Yeah, that's awesome. I do that and talked about that, in fact, a lot of times on this show, where you can't best the first idea. Whatever just came out naturally, that instinct, it's gold. You just can't beat it.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure, like, as a songwriter, you feel the same way, where these things are just kind of floating in the ether and you channel them for a brief moment and you're lucky to channel it. And then don't overthink it. You know, I think this is such an enemy. Like, the brain is such an enemy of music making.
Well, I love, you know, when I was getting into this and I was really starting to pick it apart like we're doing now, and I realized we're in verse two, we're only at 1:06 in the song. This is a 3:49 song. And I'm like, what else? It doesn't feel like it's that long. I've always said that's the making of a great song, when something is longer than it feels. But we're in 1:06.
Welcome to the Mickey Mouse Club. We'd really like it if you sang a song like this. I'm gonna sing your mouth shut. It's such a chore to find another mannequin your size, because you fit so nice.
Welcome to the Mickey Mouse Club. We'd really like it if you sang a song like this, or else you'll make me sew your mouth shut. And in parentheses, the calling response is mouth shut. It's such a chore to find another mannequin your size, because you fit so nice. I hope you're ready for it. Oh, you bet I am. I'm going to be famous.
Yeah, it's almost like a play, you know? I almost wrote it like a musical, this one, with characters exchanging sentiments. I would love to see it like on a stage with different people taking different verses. You know what I mean?
This song is like a play. I didn't think of it like that. And earlier when I asked you your musical influence, you said sometimes it's not even music. My influences could be theater, could be acting. And you just said it, a play. And that's what this verse reminds me of. I want to talk about a couple things. I love how there's harmony in this verse that was not there in verse number one. So continue with the chorus. We're getting some harmony on the whole first line. On the second line, sang a song like this, just the back half, you're getting the backing vocals. On the third line, you're getting the whole thing. On the fourth line, it's such a chore to find another mannequin. There's just a harmony on another mannequin. And I love how and where the backing vocals are mixed in this song. It's like a left-right thing. My ear's taking me to each side of the speaker. They're positioned perfectly.
Thank you. Yeah, I think a sense of like disorienting the listener briefly and like kind of flushing them down the toilet for like a second before you drop into a big wall of sound is like a really cool way to build up, just using production techniques and not musical techniques, to build up to a big chorus.
What else that I love about this track is that the choruses of this song, they're pretty much all the same, which I think you needed, because the rest of this, nothing from verse one to verse two to the bridge to the outro at the end, nothing sounds the same. And I'll use the word again, schizophrenic. It's just, what the heck is going on here? But the choruses are uniform. I almost fear that if you would have had the choruses be schizophrenic, that you might have lost me completely with this. I like the uniformity of the choruses. Sometimes I don't like that. Sometimes I want the chorus to change. But here I think it's integral to the song.
Thanks. Yeah, you know, I think you need to anchor it. And that's always very important. And it's almost like the theory behind like a Jackson Pollock painting, where the painting is inherently chaotic, but there's like almost an art to the chaos, where there's an intangible magic where it's like the perfect amount of chaos, you know? And that's like a line I'm always walking, you know?
Oh man, that's the perfect amount of chaos. I like that. Maybe that's your next record title. It's a good,
I love that, actually. Yeah,
I won't even ask for credit, whatever. All right. So on the line, I hope you're ready for it, in the pre-chorus, there's a whispered like second vocal here that kind of encapsulates that line that is just, it's cool.
Thanks. Yeah, I wanted it to feel a little creepy, you know, and whispering is, me whispering alone in a room is pretty creepy, so yeah.
You haven't heard me whisper alone in a room. the last line, oh, you bet I am, I'm going to be famous. I'm calling it a Mickey Mouse voice. Did you do that on purpose?
You're ready for it.
Oh yeah, I just sat down and like, oh, you bet I am. Yeah, like, you know, and I just, it's the only song that I do voice acting in. So
you killed it, man. Like, I almost thought you took a sample. Like, I was like, did he get that off the internet, or is that him doing that? It's really cool. Right. I like how famous that last line. It's just by itself, that word, because you know it's coming, which is chorus two. We're at 1:30. I don't know if I mentioned this the first chorus, but halfway through on just the two lines, plastic and manipulated, and you are everything you need, the drums go halftime there. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that it goes halftime, but it doesn't stay. It always comes back on that last line. It ramps you back up. I love the feel of that.
Thanks. Yeah, it's like a palate cleanse. You know, it's like a musical sorbet. It just kind of refreshes the whole thing. You know, that's how I think of it. Yeah.
only a New Yorker could use sorbet and make it, you know, make it work in a sentence involving music. I like it, Des.
Thank you.
I like at the end here, there's that big snare roll again on that last line of the chorus, but it goes right into the bridge. And you want to talk about a departure. And this is where you really hooked me, because I'm like, where's this kid coming from?
Never let a red in the Mickey Mouse Club. Never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club. I'll never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club. I ain't ready to go and hang myself and live to please some pride.
Like, where did this come from? Because it's like I'm listing all these influences that I'm hearing in my head to you up to this point. And now I'll just read what I have here. There's a single piano notes with a super present vocal. So present that you can hear your lips smack on the word club. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of nasty and really personal. Was that the intention?
Oh, absolutely. Like that intimacy. Like there's nothing that gives me goosebumps more than a completely bone dry vocal way up front. And also I wanted to signal that now it's almost like this confessional moment in the song.
We call that audible cotton mouth almost when you get that smacking. Yeah. So did you have a dry mouth? How many takes you have to do to get that? I'm serious, because that's like, that's you have, it's got an interesting pop on that when you say club.
Red in the Mickey Mouse Club.
Yeah, you know, that's, it's just like I like embracing the imperfections. So that's something that, yeah, I would usually try and notch out. And then I was like, nah, it's just like it's so real and I want it to feel real.
Well, I'm going to read out these lyrics and have you set these ones up for us. And I got some notes we'll talk after. This first part here with the single piano notes we were just talking about. And the lyric is, never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club. Never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club. You say it twice. On the second time you say it, it almost sounds like you're going to laugh, like a snicker almost.
Never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on in this song. This is a crazy one to digest. There's so much going on personally in it and how I feel about the world in it. So I am like having fun with a lot of moments in it. And this whole rat idea is like a real motif in the Des Rocks universe. I call it like the Des CU. And the idea of just like fans often call me a rat. And there's a lot of rat paraphernalia at shows. And the idea that I don't fit into this world. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't fit in to this Mickey Mouse Club bullshit. And I'm just going to always do my own thing, because that's the most important thing you can do at the end of the day.
I like your fire, man. I dig it. This part, though, that second line where you almost snicker there, do you ever, because I know you're just creating these, there's no demo. It's just you're starting a song, you're building it. Either the track works or it's sitting on your hard drive, as you said earlier. In this case, how many times did you do that vocal that with almost like the snicker, almost the laugh in there? Like, is it usually a one-off or do you have to get it right?
Something like that is a one-off. Yeah, without a doubt. You know, I won't have anything written and I'll just kind of sit down and just like mess around with a few ideas. I was like, oh, I'll just quickly comp around. I was like, go back to that first thing I did. I was like, that's it, done.
Oh man, there's just so, it's just oozing with personality there. And now that I've gotten to talk to you and meet you, I can hear that now. And it's authentic, man. It's refreshing. It's very cool.
Thank you.
The next line here that comes in, there's this crazy like keyboard noise with these synth stabs here. And the first half is the crazy key noise. And it's on the line, "They'll never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club."
They'll never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club.
The next line on every word, "I'd rather go and hang myself than live to play somebody else." There's these synth stabs.
I'd rather go and hang myself than live to play somebody else.
Just lifting this part like something's going to happen.
Yeah.
I love what you did there with the production.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because there's like a little synth in it that kind of gives it an artificial texture. But a lot of my sound and my guitar tones and everything is very simple and would be an engineer's worst nightmare, where it is simply a big muff with every knob all the way up, clipping the fuck out of an interface that was like $70 from Best Buy in 2008. And it just comes in like a brick of audio that is uneditable. And that's it, you know?
Yeah, and you just put it right in the mix where it needs to sit, and it just creates this thing, which to me, I only thought there was like synth stabs there. The fact that you shared that is cool.
Yeah, and like the synth is just a little layer on top, and it's actually just this horrendous guitar tone that I've come to love.
Well, I love, after that part that's ramping up that we just talked about with those stabs, now you're getting a bunch of voices on the next two lines, and you say, "Who's dead inside? Who's dead inside?" It happens twice, and there's just a bunch of voices here in harmonies, and this big snare roll is happening, and then it just ends with "You're so" by itself. When that happens again, you know that chorus is coming. You can just feel it. And again, we're at the 2:25 mark, chorus number 3, "Manufactured, overrated. When you come, I bet you fake it. Hope you choke on every word that leaves your throat. Plastic and manipulated, you're everything you hated. You're just a punchline to an inside joke." This time in the chorus, though, there's no snare roll on that last line. But instead, the synths are doing a buildup that then slows down and fades out. There's lots of cymbal crashes, but it's just kind of like the whole music sounds like it's just getting sludgy, like the electricity went off at a house party when a DJ smells like
yeah.
You are everything you hated. You're just a punchline to an inside joke.
I think that was an accident. Like, I think I just totally fucked something up and a bunch of plugins kind of crashed and I just recorded it to audio and it just was what it was. I actually
really
put that same snare ending in there and then it just got all fucked up and it sounded like shit and I slid something the wrong way and I was like, oh, I like it. And then I kept it. Yeah.
Happy accidents, man.
Oh yeah. No, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that is awesome that that wasn't intentional, that just happened.
I don't know how someone could like create that. It just sounds like it's falling to pieces. Yeah.
It almost sounds like it's a bad take or something, but it works. It's great.
And strangely, like I have a lot of plugins where the subscription expires. And when the subscription expires, it sounds like shit. It'll like glitch every once in a while. And sometimes I just roll with that, you know, like I just, yeah, sometimes that makes into the record.
You're on the phone with a company. Hey, keep sending me the ones with the prescription runs out. Thanks.
Yeah, the cracked ones. Yeah.
So now, after chorus 3, you're not getting a double chorus here. Oh no, we're gonna jackknife you as hard as we can, and we're gonna take you on another ride through creepy land. Now you're in the outro of this song, and this is the first time I heard. I'm like, where is this song going? Does this song even make sense?
Never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club, and I don't care. And I'll
the liver later in the Mickey Mouse Club, 'cause I'm the worst nightmare.
You know you'll never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club, and I don't care. You know you'll never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club, 'cause I'm the worst nightmare. You'll never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club, I don't.
Again, I'm going to reference here, not in any sonically or production way, but System of a Down writes like this. It's chaotic. It's schizophrenic. Mr. Bungle is another one. I don't know if you're familiar with Bungle. And I'm hearing all of this in here in terms of just how you laid this all together. It doesn't make sense, but yet it does make sense. And on this last part here, I just in my notes, I wrote that like all of a sudden it's like 1930s or 40s vaudeville. It's like you're in this like part that doesn't sound like it should even go with the rest of the song. And it's just a voice and a piano after this huge chorus. And the lyric is, no, they'll never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club, and I don't care. You know, they'll never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club because I'm their worst nightmare. You know, you'll never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club, and I don't care. You know, you'll never let a rat into the Mickey Mouse Club because I'm their worst nightmare. Oh, they'll never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club. I don't care. And on the back half of this, there's harmonies. On the whole first half, when it's just you and the piano, there's no harmonies. The harmonies come in, and there's this like huge blown out kick and snare drum that comes in. And this part is where I had written down, it gets very Queenish here, mm-hmm. With the synths over this whole outro. And that kick and snare part that happens there, where was the inspiration behind that? It's awesome.
Oh, thank you. It's just completely blown out. It was unmixable with the mixer. And I had to bounce that section as a separate wave file and combine it with the mix of the first three quarters of the song that comes before it. Because I don't know what I had done, but on our Logic session, it was just so screwed up and so fucked. But the inspiration musically, it's almost like Billy Madison, where he says, like, I drew the duck blue because I've never seen a blue duck before.
I drew the duck blue because I've never seen a blue duck before. And to be honest with you, I wanted to see a blue duck.
Well, it's an excellent blue duck. Congratulations. You just passed the first grade.
Oh, Miss Slippy, that's so great. What do you think of that, Mr. Blue Duck?
That's quacktastic.
And for me, it's like I made the section a ragtime outro because I've never heard a ragtime punk outro before. You know, and
it is. I wrote vaudeville. It's ragtime. That's the word I should have used. It is ragtime.
Very vaudevillian too. You know, I try not to be the absolute craziest shit I could possibly do. And I love that stuff. I love the drama of it. I love the emotion of it. You know, I love the idea of this like choir of people consuming the soul of a young pop star while dancing and singing about it. You know, it's so so vivid, and I'm always chasing that imagery.
Well, and that's awesome. When that huge kick drum and snare come in the back half of this, there's harmonies all over the back half, which I had mentioned on the very last line on the word never and on the word rat and on the word club. There's almost these, it doesn't sound like regular cymbals. It sounds like two crash cymbals, like a marching band is happening here.
You know, you'll never let a rat in the Mickey Mouse Club, and I don't care. You know, you'll never let a rat.
You know, it just really adds to the chaos, and it's like a party, and just it's very anthemic. And then the last line happens. And this is one of the weirdest endings of a song that I've heard in a while, but it's so cool. And I had to analyze this like 30 times to get the exact notes. I'm like, wait, how many hits is it here? Yeah, on the words, I don't care, on I, there's a synth stab on I, just one synth stab. And then there's two chainsaw revs.
I don't care.
What the hell were you thinking with that?
Oh, man.
Like, where did that come from?
I mean, again, like going back to the cinematic quality of the song that I always want to convey, I just love the idea of it almost painting the picture in the viewer's listener's head as like an execution of this character. And then on to the next one, you know what I mean? Now put in a new mannequin to fill the new slot, you know?
I dig it. On the word don't, you get three synth stabs. That's hard to say. Dun, dun, dun on don't. And then there's one long chainsaw rev. You don't get two there. You get one long one. Like, this is the final one. I'm going to cut your head off now.
Yeah.
And on the last word, care, there's a synth and a drum stab on care to end the song. And it's not super tight or lined up here, which, again, adds to the chaos. It's not perfect on the grid. I can hear it. It just kind of ends.
Yeah, it's a mess. It's a total mess. But it almost gives it like a strangely kind of live quality in what's otherwise a highly produced record. And I love that. I just love that unevenness and that imperfection. I always embrace it.
You should, man. You have tapped in to your own thing here. And you should be really proud. I'm excited to see where you go as an artist, because this is cool stuff, man. And I'm really, really honored you took the time to sit on the show with us.
Thank you. I mean, I'm honored you took the time to dig into the record. I think you know it better than I do. And I'm really impressed by the homework you did, man. That's incredible. And thank you so much for the kind words. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I wish you nothing but the best. Before we head off here, let the listeners know what's going on with you, what you got coming up.
Oh, man, I just got off my first headline tour just a couple of days ago, called Des Rocks Alive. And I will be heading back out on the road a whole bunch in 2022. And over the next 2 months, I'm just going to be walled up in my little studio, twisting knobs and getting weird again and working on a whole bunch of new music that I'm really excited about.
Right on, dude. That's awesome. Well, I got a big mouth. I'm going to tell a lot of people about you, and let's write a song together sometime. I'd be honored.
Thank you. I would love that, man. And I appreciate your early support. It means the world to me.
Hey, everybody. Don't touch that dial. There's plenty more Krista Makes a Podcast after a few words from our sponsors.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
If you're looking for an inexpensive and unique gift for a friend, family member, or even for yourself, check out iloveenamelpins.com. From Hollywood stars like Jeff Goldblum and Meryl Streep, to fictional characters like the Golden Girls or Jack Torrance, to sports stars and musicians and politicians and dogs and cats, there's something for everyone at iloveenamelpins.com. As an added bonus, use the discount code KristaMakes at checkout to save 30% off your order at iloveenamelpins.com.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your song via MP3 only and your bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Feral Vices. They're a two-piece rock band featuring Alexander Hoagland and Justin Kottner. Not content with simply being just another two-piece rock band, Feral Vices constantly strives to break the mold while providing riffs you can bang your head to and melodies you can sing along with. Here's a snippet of their song, Eat Me Alive.
Chris and Chris.
Well, that was a really cool episode. Des Rocks was new to me, just as he was new to you, Chris. And I think we were both very impressed when we heard. This was the first song I heard by him. And I'm glad we did this episode, because that was really interesting and awesome.
Yeah, his publicist hit me up out of nowhere. I got an email one morning, and I always listen to the tracks. You never know what's gonna come through. You can't be dismissive. And I put this on. I was like, wow. This is different. And I immediately sent it to you, and you were on board.
Yeah, I thought a lot of things he said were pretty cool and inspiring. One of those being that you don't necessarily need some fancy, expensive interface and a million plugins. He referenced using expired plugins and things. That if you are creative with those things and the emotion comes across, and that emotion that comes across in the music then connects with people, you don't need a fancy producer or studio or anything like that. You can create something that means a lot to a lot of people from your own house. You know, I thought that was something I took away as one of the biggest things from this episode.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm double his age. I learned on a completely different medium than he did. It was to tape. There was nothing digital that was going on when I first started. I didn't even mention this in the episode, but his future as a producer is bright outside of his career. I mean, if things don't take off and he doesn't have a long career in this, he definitely has a long career as a producer, because what he's doing is amazing. You know, and as you said, he's recording this stuff on a MacBook using expired plugins, and basically he's just learned how to manipulate frequencies and make them sound good. But what's more impressive is, where does this come from? Where do you, from your brain to your fingertips to the computer, create something like this song? It's really awesome.
Yeah, I knew when you asked him if he had demos of the song that the answer was going to be that he just built the demos out and they turned into the actual song. Because yeah, if you're recording this way, why would you go re-record something? You're going to either record over what you did last, or you're just going to keep building on those original tracks.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I've done that too. There's been times where, you know, even on Less Than Jake stuff, where we've flown stuff from demos before, because you just, why re-record it? It's already there. The part's already there. In this instance, though, there's no demos at all. It's just, he's creating something from scratch. And a lot of times it never gets put out there for the world to hear. It's sitting, as he said, in his hard drive.
When I listened to him, I related to aspects of his songwriting style in a lot of ways, mainly in the part that he's doing things and trying things without always knowing the why of it. Now, a lot of my bandmates and people I surround myself with can explain to you exactly why that chord progression works together, or why those notes work together well, or you know, what makes sense in a theory perspective musically, whereas I don't have as much of that. I just kind of do. And then if it turns out cool, and I feel like all of us who write songs have that to a certain extent, it's just our knowledge of the why of it varies.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm a little bit more in his world when I'm writing a song.
I wish I could be more like that. That's just, you know what? I'm just experimenting here. And he even said it at some point, like, yeah, you know the go-to sounds or the guitar you're going to pick up for this part. Or actually what he said was what chords you're going to go to. And that's the part of that I don't like of where I'm at as a musician. I know I'm going to go to the F sharp here. I always do that for the bridge. Or I know I'm going to go to this chord. It's my go-to. And I like a little bit more of what I'm calling reckless abandon. That's his approach. Mm-hmm. You know, he said a lot of things too that could almost come off as cocky. You know, he's like 22 years old. Man, I was insanely nuts and I had a mouth on me and I was cocky at that age, but it was coming from that punk, you know, like, screw everybody, I'm gonna do it myself. And he's got that DIY aesthetic to it, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he's backing it up musically. There's a lot of young people out there saying those kind of things but can't back it up, whereas, you know, I didn't think he came off too cocky. I think just the right amount of it. I think that's what you and I said to each other.
Oh yeah, and that makes sense
for what is coming through in the music.
Yeah,
you know?
And usually cocky is a four-letter word. In this instance, it's awesome. He's just like, this is me, this is who I am, and I didn't look at that as a bad thing at all. I like that he knows that it doesn't have to be perfect. You know, that one part that was slowing down, that's because like a plugin or something crashed on him or his computer crashed, and he left it because he liked the how chaotic it sounded. He liked how it made him feel.
Right. Yeah, it's cool. I was surprised that he didn't know Oingo Boingo. But, you know, he knew Danny Elfman. But I hope that this podcast inspires Dez to check out some Oingo Boingo, because he's going to be like, oh, this is so up my alley. I was also wondering, Chris, this song, MMC, stands for Mickey Mouse Club. Is the Mickey Mouse Club still a thing? You have young kids. You might know. I don't know. Does it still exist?
I don't know if it's just in syndication with reruns or if they're still making new ones. My kids don't watch it. Or if it is out there, I haven't seen it. But I bet one quick Google search would show that maybe it's out there. I don't know. But for legal reasons, I'd asked him at the top. And I was pretty sure why this was abbreviated to MMC. But I'm going to call it the Mickey Mouse Club. That's the name of the song.
Yeah, Mickey Mouse Club might be the real name of this song for sure. And speaking of prestigious clubs, Chris, all the coolest people I know are a part of a club that I like to call our Chris Demakes a Podcast Facebook group.
Absolutely. I think it's a very, very cool club myself. I really do.
We're always talking about it in the raps, but the fact of the matter is, it's a good place for us to interact with people, hear what they have to say about the shows, talk about music. It's just a nice place. I'm getting to know people in there.
I love it. There's only one thing that irks me a little bit.
I know what it is.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It absolutely 100% has to be the fact that people are always misspelling your last name.
It's been my whole life. It's just they leave out the capital M in the middle. They pronounce it wrong. It's just been butchered. And I don't know, man. The older I get, the more disgruntled I get. You think I'd be over it by now, you know?
Once a week, I get a text from you that says, "Hey, will you hit this person up and tell them to spell my name right in this article?" So I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Why not?"
Well, like I said, you'd think I wouldn't be this disgruntled as the older that I get, but I am. It hits me, and it comes in waves. And I did something about it.
Oh yeah, what'd you do?
This.
My last name's the mix with an uppercase capital M.
Oh, that was great. I don't think anybody's going to mess up your name anymore after that.
You'd be surprised. I don't know. I might have to take out some ads across commercial radio across the country with that thing, and maybe it'll solve the problem. I'll tell you one thing. I am going to send it to every teacher that butchered my name in all my school years. So I got them a song coming.
I feel your pain with a weird last name, man. People have been putting a U at the end of my last name forever. It's just F-A-F-A-L-I-O-S. It's almost like a song. F-A-F-A-L-I-O-S. There's no U in there. There's no U. No U's at all. So I know what you're going through, man. And you know, when we have guests on our show, I really go the extra mile to make sure that everything about their name is correct in our ads and everything. I just think it's cool. It's a sign of respect. Remember when we had Karina on from Dancehall Crashers / NoFX?
Yeah, I always thought her last name was Denike, but it's Denike. And I asked her how to pronounce her last name because I wanted to pronounce it right. Because I know the perils of having a last name that's pronounced messed up.
And hers is tricky, too, because she has an accent mark, which she actually, I don't think, uses a lot of the times. And I asked her about it, and she's like, "Oh, it's fine either way. I think I put the accent mark in there." But it's important. It's important to give people their actual name.
Absolutely. And you know what else is important, Chris? Our supporting cast program.
A lot of important people in there and a lot of very nice, generous people that allow us to continue making the podcast that you love.
Absolutely. You get new episodes each week of The After Party, which is just a little extension of the podcast, as well as our new little series called Defeat Demakes. It's a music trivia show. And I'd like to take you on. If you think you got what it takes to beat me in music trivia, please join our supporting cast and take me on.
Yeah, if you haven't heard the first episode of our new trivia game show, Defeat Demakes, all you gotta do is go back like 2 episodes on Chris Demakes a Podcast. You can take a listen. If you think you can defeat Demakes, you can join our supporting cast at chrisdemakes.com. You'll be supporting the podcast and getting lots of extra episodes. And you can throw your hat in the ring to take on Chris. You know, we really enjoy making this podcast and we appreciate your support. It allows us to continue making it. I recently described our podcast, I don't know if this is accurate, but I described it as sort of like a masterclass in songwriting where we're bringing in all the world's best songwriters, or at least the ones that will agree to do our show, on here to talk about how they go about writing songs. And I like to think that that is a valuable thing.
Yep, and if you haven't already, please give me a follow on Instagram at @LessThanChrisD. I would love that. I want to thank this week's guest, Des Rocks, for sitting in with us, and we'll see you next week.
Pitchfork said absolutely nothing about the Vipers album Spread the Poison.
L-I-V-I-N-E-N-D-I-S-T-R-T. Children are living in sewers with nothing to eat.
But punk fan Brock Renata said,
blah!
Yeah!
The punk is motherfucker!
Check out the Vipers album, Spread the Poison, streaming everywhere now, including Down Your Leg.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.